win, you're not worth more. If you lose, you're not worth less. We're all priceless.
Welcome to the Mark for Greatness podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Stephen Hayes, and along with me again today is co-host Dr. Billy Smith. We've got a special podcast for you today. Coming from Wyoming, I believe, is Dawneen Taylor. She's an author of Heart of the Champion. She's also a WPRA World Champion calf roper. We're super excited to pick her brain and hopefully give you a little tidbit as you prepare for the world show. Dr. Smith, why don't you kick us off a little bit?
So, Ms. Taylor, you know, one of the things that impressed me most is that you are a calf roper, and that's pretty impressive. Because that takes grit and skill all at one time. But I was looking through some of your book, and there were actually three areas that I thought were super interesting. I'm going to start with one. Our staff hears me say ad nauseum that hope is not a strategy. And you talk about replacing hope with something a little more actionable, if I understand it correctly. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be on the podcast. I have been looking forward to this. We need hope. I use it as an acronym. Hold on, possibility exists. We gotta believe that our future is gonna be better than where we're at right here, right now. But what I've learned working with just a superb elite inner circle is that it takes strategy to get to where you want to go, and ask for help and focusing on the right things. Huge part of running down bold goals, having a plan, executing the plan, having a strategy, super important. It's just not a wish or a want. There's a lot of work that needs to go into it.
So in the horse show community or the equine community, sports community, is there a common kind of strategy you think that all of our equine exhibitors, you know, we've got a world show coming up. Talk to us about strategy.
Well, I mean, I've worked with hundreds of equestrian athletes, competitors, and one thing that I've noticed that everyone has a gap in or a concern about is confidence. You know, a lot of folks say, man, I've lost my confidence. Dang, I felt confident yesterday, and now where did it go? And the thing about confidence, it's not a feeling. We don't want to wait for confidence to show up or appear. Confidence is an action. Confidence is something that we do. Also, another commonality is focus. We want to focus on what we can control. Focus on what we want to have happen. Another commonality is positive self-talk. How we talk to ourselves. We don't want to listen to ourselves. We want to talk to ourselves. And the way in which we talk to ourselves, it can spiral us up. I mean, the direction we want to go towards our goals, or it can just quickly spiral us down. Our perspective. That's another part that a lot of folks struggle with. Some folks, I mean, here's a perspective. Let me throw this out at y'all. You complete this phrase, okay? Garbage in, garbage
out.
Well, that's a perspective. And a lot of folks, they have that perspective. But let me see if I can shift your perspective. What if I said garbage in, garbage stays? Garbage stays. I mean, if you let those negative thoughts, those unproductive thoughts into your mind, they set up shop. They have a family. They invite friends over. It's knowing what to do when you have those negative thoughts or those doubt thoughts. Being able to catch them, acknowledge them, release them, insert, replace them with something else. And then training, practicing. There is a proper way to practice, and there's a very unproductive way to practice. And those five things, I mean, really has been a commonality that I've noticed. Also releasing poor performances so you can reset, refocus, get back to the next event or the next the next class. I mean, there are so many commonalities just in the equestrian. I you know, horse show, jumpers, reining, rein cow horse, cutting. We all think we're so different, but we're really much more alike than we are different.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, before we, I've got a ton of questions for you on mental management. It's kind of one of the things that I focus on a lot, and it's shifted my focus over the last few years, especially. But I kind of want you to tell the people listening to a little bit about yourself, your background, why calf roping, and then, you know, why it transitioned you into this mental coaching that you're doing now.
Well, I mean, I started out in the horse show world. That's where I started out, going to horse shows, 4-H, little play days, gymkhanas. Here's my horse show story. Okay, so I'm like 7 or 8, and my first horse show, and I'm in equitation. I'm on Big Red. I'm on my dad's horse, and doing the equitation. I mean, I'm in Rapid City, you know, the Black Hills area. It's a pretty big show, and they line us up. I don't place. I come out, my dad, he's a little hot. I didn't place. I mean, he's like, you should have won it. He says, so we tied up Big Red. My dad took me. He says, we're going to go see the judge. And so my first horse show. So we run him down. My dad says, hey, this is my girl. She should have won it. I don't know what you're thinking. The judge, he says, sir, he says, there's no way I could have placed your daughter. There's absolutely no way she could have won the event riding with rope and reins. And so he says, had she had split reins, yep, she would have won it. But that's part of the rules. You got to have split reins. And so Monday, my dad, he brought home after work some split reins. We practiced with split reins, but I tell it, because, I mean, you start where you start, and you work your way up, and you ask questions, and we're all learning. We're all growing. But that was my first experience in the horse show world. You need to have split rein. I grew up through the high school ranks, the collegiate ranks, and at 14, I had a goal to win the world in the calf rope and in the WPRA. And that dream, it bubbled up because of my inner circle way back when I was 11, 12 years old. I was hanging out with Paul and his wife at the time, Kelly Tierney. And I just thought, man, this would be really cool to calf rope. I'm goat tying at the time. But Kelly, she's referencing Paul and the college kids that are there. And it's a goal that I had that just never, the spark just never went out. And after I married Stan and had my first kiddo, that dream, that desire, it just kept bubbling up. And we're like 1996, 1997, and Stan says, man, let's get you a horse. Let's get you a calf horse. And that's what set it all off for me. And I struggled. I sucked for a really long time. I was not a very good roper. But I kept plugging away. I kept working at it, and working with Larry D. Guy back in 2013, that really sparked me to change the way I roped. And I've had a lot of great people in my circle, Troy Pruitt and Scott Hormos, and then working with my mental coach, Brian Kane. I was going along pretty good, and I was gaining the skill sets I needed. And come 2016, I could really feel the momentum building, and I'm driving home from Lazy E. I had done really well, and I'm thinking, man, what else can I do? And shucks, by the time I got into Kansas, I'm thinking, you know, if I had a mental performance coach, I think that would really make the difference. And so I reached out to Brian, and man, we worked hard. We worked furious. He called me up a bunch. I learned a lot. And I just embraced the whole mental performance part of it. And I had a good background coming into working with Brian. I mean, I had been on this journey of really working to connect the dots, but I didn't really have anybody helping me in the mental performance. I was trying to do it all on my own, and I struggled. I struggled understanding. And where my struggle was I would read it out of a book or watch it on a webinar or hear it on a video, and I would do it, but then I wouldn't get the results. I wouldn't get the results. So I would think, well, that didn't work. And what I learned was this mental performance, it takes a lot of practice to master it, just like anything. It's not a one and done. It's fun, a lot of fun.
Do you think, it's interesting you say that, because I sometimes see among some folks this expectation that they should just be good. It should just happen. It should be instant. It should happen tomorrow. And they get very frustrated when it doesn't. Does that have to do with our society? Or what do you think about that kind of notion? Because I seem to see it a lot.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's John Maxwell. That's where I first read it or heard it was, you know, we're kind of a microwave society. You know, we want things instantaneously. We want it now. And running down bold goals, running down things that are worth running down, it's more of a crock pot. It's a slow cooker. And it's perspective, right? You can have the perspective of microwave. You know, I want it now. I'm going to get it now. If I don't get it now, I'm off to the next thing. Or you can look at it as a perspective of crock pot cooking. You know, it's going to take some steps. It's going to take a lot of time. If it's not happening now, it's just not happening yet. That's the most powerful three-letter word ever. It's a perspective shift. And one thing I know for sure, if I can shift my mindset, if I can shift my perspective, if I can do it, anybody can do it. Because I struggled a lot, but it took practice. It took a lot of practice. It takes practice to master anything. And then you need to keep remastering. It's not a one and done. It's not like, oh, I got a mental game, now I don't need to work at it. It's, ooh, I got a mental game, I'm going to keep working at it.
You talked a little bit about a secret sauce, about your secret sauce. And, you know, I think there are kind of concentric circles of success that people have. But let's hear about the secret sauce.
Well, yeah, and that is having a routine. And having a routine is what gives you consistency. And consistency is what separates the good from the world class. Consistency. I was hot and cold for decades. I do well, I didn't do well. I was really inconsistent. And what it boiled down to was the consistency in how I prepared, in how I competed. It's that consistency that helps you perform consistency. How you do anything is how you do everything, and it's having a solid routine. Your routine becomes your focus. Instead of focusing on the outcome, the doubt, what's she doing? What are they thinking? What are they saying? What are they doing? What's that judge going to do? What's, past performances? What's going to happen in the future? Instead of focusing on distractions and drama and noise, if you'll focus on your routine becomes your focus. And your routine is not checking off the boxes. Your routine is like stepping into the shower. I mean, we all take a shower differently, but we're not standing in the shower, checking off the boxes. Okay, hair, check, face, check, hips, check. You don't step out of the shower thinking, man, did I wash my face? Did I do that right? No, you just step out of the shower and you're clean, you're fresh. We all do it differently. We all get basically the same result. And that's what our routine is. And I help my clients establish their routine, make it their own so they can compete. So they can flip the switch.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you said that, because, you know, Steven's left the pits off of his checklist. I mean, it's kind of embarrassing.
Well, I just want Billy, I just want you to know I'm coming. And plus, if I stink, you never call me in your office, get on to me, because you don't want to deal with me. So it's It's like a dual purpose, man.
Well, that is a strategy.
I have a strategy. That's right. I have a strategy 100%. But I do have a question talking about your routine. I totally agree that you need to have a routine on there. But the one thing that I do see that comes up is there's times where someone throws a wrench or something throws a wrench in your routine. So let's say that your routine is getting ready. You always saddle your horse first, then you let warm up, and then you put your boots on, and then you go look at the chutes or whatever it is. Let's say you're running late and you can't go look at the chutes, you can't look at your cow, whatever your routine involves. How do you mentally prepare for your routine getting wrecked?
Well, that's a really good question. And what it boils down to is being adaptable, being flexible. And this is something I will visualize. I will visualize my routine getting derailed. I call it awfulize. I'm going to awfulize. If something goes wrong, I'm going to visualize it. So I've already been there. I've already done that. It's like an algorithm, right? So when I'm coming in hot, I'm coming in hot, and I'm not going to have time. I'm barely going to have time to pay my fees. When that happens, I do this. This is my routine. When this happens, then I do that. And it's knowing, it's already knowing what you're going to do. It's playing offense. The way you described it, that's defense. Defense, not a very fun place to be. Right. We want to play offense. We want to control what we can control. We can control how we respond when things get derailed. And it's already having that plan in place.
Absolutely.
It takes practice. It takes time to work through those algorithms.
I noticed a lot, and with my wife and I and some of our friends, you know, they seem like they have a pretty good mental game, but then at the end, they have a lot of, if it didn't go well, it relates back to caring what people think, because there's people there they know, they don't do a good job. So then they're almost to a point where they're just embarrassed. It's an embarrassment thing, I think. So you have all this mental prep. At what point or what strategy do you use to let go of that fear of caring what people think of you, how you competed that day or days before or whatever it is?
Yeah, you know, President Roosevelt said, you know, comparison is the thief of joy. That's his quote. And it does really steal your joy when you're worrying about comparison. And when we compare, we're really doing ourselves a disservice. We're not honoring our journey. And it's having,
you're on the call.
It's having, Mr. Hayes. All right, here we go. There's winners and there's
losers.
Yeah, that's a perspective. How about this? There's winners and there's learners.
Yeah.
If you have the sometimes I win, sometimes I learn. Freud Pruitt told me, either you win or you learn, Donnie. And man, that broke open my world. That really made a lot of sense for me at that time. And if we have that perspective, that can help us shift away from comparing ourselves to others. A lot of folks talk about, I'm competing against that person, competing against these people. How about the shift? I'm competing with them.
Yeah.
With them. I'm going to learn from them. And the whole embarrassment, the whole comparison, a lot of times, I mean, that throws up a red flag for me that your self-worth is attached to the outcome of how you do. And, you know, showing, that's what you do. That's not who you are. I mean, down deep inside of us, I mean, the horses, being competitive, that's a lot of who I am. But the results, that doesn't define me. It's going to help refine me, not define me. And it's knowing where your self-worth comes from.
Yeah.
If you win, you're not worth more. If you lose, you're not worth less. We're all priceless. We all have the same worth.
Yeah.
And it takes practice. It takes practice. It's catching those thoughts. This is what you do. You see yourself, man, I'm thinking, man, I wonder what they're thinking. I wonder what they're saying. I wonder what they're doing. Man, I'm embarrassed. It's catching that thought. Have y'all fished? Y'all fish before?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Y'all do like the catch and release?
I've done that, and I've done it unintentionally a few times.
Okay. You know, that's what we do when we have those, I'm going to call them unproductive thoughts or negative thoughts, thoughts that are not helping me to get what I want. When I have those thoughts, hey, we're always going to have them. It's not that you're going to avoid them. You catch them. You acknowledge them. That's not what I want. That's not going to help me move forward. You release it. You already have your thoughts that you're going to insert. Like, hey, I did my best. This is what I learned. This is what I did well today. I'm going to congratulate the person that won it today. I'm going to take the next step forward. What can I do? What some strategies I can start to incorporate? Who can I reach out to? But how can I take the next step forward? I mean, looking forward, not getting stuck in the past. It's already happened. Let's move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense because I feel like Billy's always comparing himself to me, and he's always mad at my good looks. So his joy is gone. That makes a lot of sense.
I'm comparing my head of hair to your head of hair. And I am always superior.
Embracing your gifts. You know, you got to embrace your gifts. We're all talented. We're all talented in different ways. And if you don't have the skill set, you don't have the talent that you want, you need to do the work.
Yeah.
You need to get the strategies. You need to put in the effort.
Right, absolutely.
Steven's talent is he's got a bald head, and you know.
Well, I hope I never get your talent of growing gray hair, because I really don't want to have to deal with that.
So Donnie, let's move on to more mature conversation here. So I'm riding into the ring. I'm about to compete. I'm riding in, and I get that kind of self-talk that, you suck. You're going to crash and burn as soon as you get in the arena. So how does that work mechanically? How do I grab that thought, release it, and replace it with something else? Because I think everybody's been there. They're just about to do whatever it is, whether it's a horse show event or a speaking event or something. And as you're walking in, it's kind of, you suck. You're going to crash. Walk us through some mental exercises that can help us through those kind of times.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we talked about the routine. And that routine, it's a physical routine. It's something that you do. But that routine also includes that mental script. It's written. We got it. Maybe you've wrote it on note cards. You know what you already know, what you're going to say. When you have that negative self-talk, I know before I compete, I'm going to focus on my three ABCs of focus, the three process goals that I know when I do these things, I'm going to be successful. So roping on Chester, my little horse, my three ABCs of focus outside of the arena is ride Chester bumper to bumper, his nose, cast tail. That's my spot. I like that look. That means I'm going to need to use my left hand. Get him behind that calf, move him where I need him to be. My second is feel my tip. Feel all the points of my rope. My third is take my hand to the neck. To the calf's neck. When I do those three things, I know I'm going to be successful. Now that's process-oriented goals. Those are three goals that are in my control. I can't control how fast I'll be. I can't control if I win. I can't control if I get a check. There's so many things I can't control. But I can control how I do those three things.
Absolutely. And that's how you measure success too, right? Like if you're saying with the control, so you got your ABCs of focus. So now you walk out of the arena. Let's say you don't win a dime. You don't win the rope and whatever it is. But you walked out. You executed perfectly your three things. That's also a successful day in your – yeah, okay.
That is a win. And I know what I'm going to say. I'm prepared. Process over outcome. I trust myself. I'm a bad cat. I love this little horse. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else than right here, right now, here at the rodeo, here at the show. I have those things already in place. What I'm going to say, I'm not just rolling the dice and letting just random things come in my head. I'm not going to listen. I'm going to talk to myself, not listen to myself. And I'm going to breathe. I'm going to take breaths. If we're breathing, we are focused. We are focused in nice, deep breaths. A lot of us, I mean, me especially, I mean, I had no idea the importance of learning how to breathe and to breathe properly and how that breath can shift our body chemistry, our brain chemistry.
I read Lanny Basham wrote a book with Winning in Mind, and in that book he said that if you have a lot of nerves right before you walk into your competition, if you'll yawn, yeah, it releases all those nerves just kind of fade away because your body relaxes and allows you to compete at your best ability. I found that fascinating when you said that.
It is, and like if you're talking to some people and you see people yawning, you know, a lot of folks will think, man, they're bored. I better pick up the pace. Oh my gosh, I must be sucking. But here's the deal: a yawn, when folks yawn, it means they're having kind of a brain shift. It doesn't mean they're bored. It means, ooh, something hit with them.
Yeah. So when I'm yawning, Billy, you know, I'm not, I don't really, I actually am interested in what you're saying. I'm not being boring.
Yeah, but the problem is the yawning that's then followed by the sleeping. That's the problem, Stephen.
I can't help it. I need you to be a little more energetic in your delivery, man.
Let me tell you, better people than you have fallen asleep in front of me before. So, I'm always amazed at the number of people who meet failure. So they, you know, they do crash and burn. And then they do, in my mind, in my history, they do one of two things. They either look for someone or something to blame. Or they do what you're talking, they learn, they figure out better ways to improve. How can someone break that? You know, they learn, the folks who blame people, they learn that behavior some way. How do you break that cycle?
Yeah, it's BCD. Coach Urban Meyer, Ohio State football coach, he wrote the book Above the Line. It's above the line. His players, you want to be above the line. No blaming, no complaining, no being defensive, being coachable, not defensive. No poor, pitiful me. No ain't it awful club. We don't want any of those. And that's perspective. That's a perspective. And the way you come across to a better perspective, and this is how I suggest to do it, you draw that line in the sand and you step across it and you tell yourself, man, that was me, but that's not going to be me no more. I'm going to own every last thing of it. Here's the deal. Folks that blame, folks that complain, folks that do that, you're giving your power away. You're giving your power away. You're giving it to something else. How can you fix? How can you change? How can you adjust? If you're allowing your power to be given to that thing that you're blaming, you're complaining about, if you'll own every last bit of it, step across the line, own it, then you have power to change it. It's empowering, but it's a decision. You know, the Latin root of decision is to cut off. You got to cut off that bad behavior. It's not productive behavior. If you want to do better, If you want to do better, you got to be better. And it starts from the inside.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stephen, are you paying close attention to this?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm writing down notes right here.
This is all about you, buddy.
Yeah, I'm writing down notes. It's like Stephen's how-to, and then I'm going to give it to
no
you,
more
Dr.
Complaints.
Smith. That's right.
No more complaints.
So as you're talking through some of this, it brings up a ton of questions. But, you know, I see people that are also kind of going back to, you know, it's a decision. I see people that they don't do good. They're a competitor in some event, but they don't do good. And then they call around to their friends and their family and they tell them how they didn't do good. And it's the pity party and they're wanting to hear, oh, you're great. You've done a good job. Just keep trying, that kind of stuff. But if you actually give the hard truth that your mental game needs to improve, and here, you know, you need to start developing your self-worth and so on and so forth. At what point do, let's say you're a strong mental competitor and you have someone that comes to you that's not, and they're playing that game. At what point do you say, look, until you decide, or do you try to help that person? Because I see it kind of like almost like a drug addict, right? You're not going to change until you decide to change. And so how do you handle those situations?
Well, I mean, for me, it's developing that elite inner circle. It's who you have in your inner circle. And I mean, Jim Rohn says, you know, his quote was, you know, you become the average of the five people that you surround yourself with the most. And who you surround yourself with is crucial. And as I was developing my elite inner circle, it really helped me to quiet the noise, the distractions, the drama. I mean, I already knew who I would go to if I had a question. Okay? I wasn't going to ask my family. I mean, I was going to ask Larry D, if that Larry D guy, if she was someone who could help me, or Troy Pruitt, or Brian. I was going to ask somebody in my inner circle who could help me. And as you develop your elite inner circle, I mean, you want to reach out to folks who already have what you want. Already have what you want. Somebody that's been there, done that, got the t-shirt.
Right.
And I knew I was going to ask them. That really helped me with my decision making. A lot of my decisions were already made. I mean, for instance, we talked about the no blaming, no complaining, no being defensive. Hey, the line was drawn. It was drawn. I was not gonna do that. The decision was already made. I knew I was gonna own everything. And when you have people coming to you, I mean, I don't tolerate the no blaming, the no complaining, no being defensive. And I'm not gonna call people out on that. I'm gonna call them up. Call them up to be better. I'm not pointing the finger at them. I'm saying, hey, me too. I've done it. This is how I've done it. This is what's worked for me. You may want to try it, but you're right. It's got to start from the inside.
Yeah.
But the more you surround yourself with positive, productive people who already have what you want, it becomes a lot easier to make productive, positive, forward-moving decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand now why Billy's hired me and a few of the other employees around here. I get it. Yeah, I get it. I finally understand. It makes so much sense now.
It took a while, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
I told you, Donnie.
That's right.
We warned you.
I love it. I've been looking forward to it.
And you're more than welcome to give it to him, too. I mean, he takes it good. He really does. He doesn't get mad. He understands. It is what it is.
I'm just feeding you the material.
That's right. That's right.
She's the batting practice pitcher. But you quoted Jim Rohn. You're already pretty high on my list. Now you're like astronomy. You're way up there. Stephen doesn't even know who Jim Rohn is, so...
Well, I don't. But
well, then,
did you know? I do have to share this though, Donnie. Did you know that Dr. Smith here is the actual doctor that you sit on a couch and tell your problems to?
No, not. I didn't know what type of doctor he was.
Yeah, that's the one. He actually has a couch in his office. I mean, that's true. Look behind his. If you can see the video, you can see it in the video. Behind him is a couch.
I love it.
But the only people that come in and sit on my couch, all they want to do is blame and complain. So I'm just not very good at it. But I'm getting better. Just by talking to you, I'm getting better at this. So, Stephen, you can't come in here and complain anymore, okay?
Okay. Sounds
it's
good.
It's already, yeah.
I mean, my mental game's getting stronger, so I don't need you anymore, Dr. Smith. Sorry.
Yeah. So I have a question, Donnie, about... The equine world and universe. I know that you've had. Are there anything what's unique about the horse world? And what I mean by that is, one of the things that's different is your partner is an animal, And how does that, how is that different from, say, I don't know, like a swimmer or someone like that, where their performance is, the performance is tied to their personal performance. They're not partnering up with someone like an animal, which has a completely, you know, it's a unique kind of sporting event that we're in from that perspective. Talk a little bit about that and that relationship and that attitude the person has versus how that translates sometimes to the horse.
Oh, yeah. This is good, Doc. This is really good. So, yeah, we need to gear our internal performance state, our IPS. We need to gear it to what works well for us, but we also need to keep our horse in mind as well. So, I mean, a baseball player, a football player, I mean, it's just all about them and all about their internal performance state. So let's say that they like to, for me, okay, I like to feel it. I like to feel my heartbeat. I like to feel that excitement. And you know, you give yourself a number from 1 to 10, your internal performance state. Tying down, I like to be a 7-8. Now, that's real subjective. You know, there's nothing that really says when you're a 7, you're this, and this. But that's the number I've assigned to my internal performance state. I like to feel it. When I ride Chester, I can be an 8 all day long. It's not going to mess with him. However, when I ride Rusty, my other little calf horse, I may not want to be an 8. I may want to do a little more breathing. I may want to make sure that my state is a little more lower on the level, like more of a 6-7 for Rusty, because he picks up on that and it affects his performance state. So it's knowing what your horse needs to perform their best as well. And horses, I mean, Larry D, the first time I heard this, you know, she says, you know, a horse can feel a fly on his butt, you know. Do you think he can't feel your butt get tight or feel your heart racing? They feel all of that. They pick up on, horses are really sensory. I mean, they really pick up on what we're doing. And so I guess to answer your question is we need to gauge our internal performance state. We need to take our horse into consideration with that. And that truly is a separation between like a swimmer or a baseball player.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, if you have a 68 reiner and you have a 75 reiner in your barn, you have different expectations for what your results are going to be.
It's a mindset, absolutely. But your routine, you know, of how you get to your, you know, the person's internal performance state, your routine can be the same, but you may need some little adjustments. Your focus on the goal. I mean, you may have your ABCs of focus outside the arena is probably going to be a little different for your 68 compared to your 74.
Yeah.
You may have different process goals.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Donnie, you talk a lot about, focusing on things you can control. With working with some of the athletes you work with and some of the people you work with, what are the common things people focus on that they don't need to be focusing on because it's outside of their control?
Yeah, and this is really huge, and focus is really layered, but a big part of focus is focusing on things that you can control, not things that you can't control. And a lot of times, I mean, I'll have my client, I mean, take a piece of paper, draw a line down the middle, on the left side, put things that you can't control, on the right side, put things that you can control. And things that you can't control, I mean, the weather, the dirt, the cattle, the judge, you can't control so many things. You can't control who's there. You can't control the score that you get. You cannot control if you win or not. Because if you could control, if you could win or get placed, you would do it every time. You just can't control so much. focusing on yourself, focusing on your process is a big part of what you want to focus on. Focus on your attitude. Focus on your body language. Focus on your effort, your enthusiasm, your perspective. Focus on your positive self-talk. There's a lot of things that you can control that folks forget about. And, you know, big body language is a big part, is a big part of confidence. But you want to have that big body language for the right reason. I mean, we're not having that big body language to one-up anybody. We're not having that big body language to appear cocky or arrogant. I mean, that's the wrong spirit to have the big body language. Having the big body language, your spine straight, your eyes up, we want to do that to put ourselves in the peak performance state. It's not for anyone else. It's for ourselves. And if we're focusing on other people, you know, what other people are doing or saying or what they're thinking, or if that's part of our strategy to intimidate other people, man, we're taking our eyes off of our process. We want to have both eyes on our process. And it's crucial. It really is a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things that I was going to ask too, there, you know, as your different age levels, one, what's...
Oh, here we go.
No. I'm not going to go that mean. I'm going to hold here back on my zingers for Dr. Smith on this one. But
get ready, Dane.
But you know, at what age do you think, and I know this comes into play as I don't have children, but I know that it comes into play, and there's lots of books on it, mental preparation for your kids as they start going through into competitiveness, whatever that sport may be, whether it's rodeo or, you know, high school sports. So what age should you start your kids start mental preparation? And then does your mental preparation shift as you start to age, you know, as you're going through your different cycles in life, does your mental preparation at all shift?
Oh, that's interesting question. That's good. I mean, that's really good. I don't think you're too young to start mental preparation. And I don't think you're too old. My age range so far, I mean, it certainly could go younger and older, but 11 to 72, that's the range that I've coached, athletes. And, you know, it's laying that foundation. It's laying that foundation. Today, I'm excited. I have a coaching session with my 11-year-old. And I'll tell you what, we're gonna talk about the same things that I'm gonna talk about with my competitors that are going to the national high school finals, that are wanting to win, hold up the big $100,000 check at the American. We're talking about the same things. Now, my presentation may be a little different, but it's the same thing. I mean, I can coach, teach different strategies, you know, 15 different ways.
Right. So what she's saying, what you're saying is there's still hope for Dr. Smith.
You guys are brutal. I love it. That's awesome. Yeah. No, it's the foundation. I mean, it is the foundation. And it all builds on each other. When you have that foundation, you are really empowered. But it's not a one and done. There is no finish line, just like anything. You keep building on it. You keep tweaking on it. You keep growing. It's a lot of fun.
When you're coaching athletes, is there a difference in your approach to men and women? And do men and women embrace this mental preparation differently?
Man, it's been the same for me.
Mm-hmm.
It truly has been the same. And I, like I say, I have different ways to deliver it. I have different examples to give. But it's the same skill. It's basically the same foundation, and they all embrace it. And like I said in the very beginning, we all think we're really different. We all are have all these special things, and we all do this. I mean, man, we're all the same.
Well, Steven's a little different.
And I like it. Different. I definitely like it.
You know, I worked with Brian, and I mean, this is the first time I had worked with a mental performance coach, and we're Skyping or Zooming. That's how I coach. And I mean, I'm like confiding into him. I'm like, Brian, I visualize in the shower. I mean, is that weird? And he's like, Donnie, he says, all my MMA fighters visualize in the shower. He says, if I was to put, he's coached 5 UFC world champion fighters, the guys that fight in the cage. He says, if I was to put them all in a circle in the same room and had them all talk and visit, he says, they all think they're doing weird stuff. They all think they're the only one. He says, they all struggle. They all get scared. They all struggle with confidence. They all visualize in the shower.
You know, there's something to that, though. I think people visualize and they get creative when they're relaxed, and a lot of times you're relaxed in the shower. Mowing my lawn, my tractor, that's a pretty good place for me to get relaxed and think and be creative and that kind of thing. But I think you're right. I understand why the shower is a place for some people to visualize and as you're talking about, for sure.
Yeah.
And we all need to create that space where we can use our imagination and let our creative juices flow and be innovative. It's creating that space.
Yeah, absolutely.
Giving ourselves permission. A lot of times folks say, man, if I'm not doing something, then I'm not doing anything. But sometimes sitting and thinking
That's interesting you say that, because I think that's a super important thing, thinking time. But we kind of have a culture that's a little bit like, if you're not doing something, you're lazy or something like that, that thinking time's pretty critical.
Yeah, it is. I've read a lot, okay, and I've implemented a lot. There's more than just reading the book. Reading the book, putting it on the shelf, and not implementing anything is just like not reading the book. True. So I'm reading a John Maxwell book, and he talks about having a thinking chair. And I'm thinking, that is just the dumbest idea ever. Who has a chair that they go and sit in and think? And then I'm processing it, and I'm like, well, I'm going to do it. And you know what? I got me a thinking bench. And that's where I ended up writing my book, was sitting on that bench in my tap room. And, you know, I could have put that book back up on the shelf and not had a thinking spot, but I did it. And
you wrote the book in your tack room? That's awesome.
I got a pretty nice tack room. I mean,
still, though.
Everything I got, it's small. This is a one girl operation here at my place. But it is nice. And, every morning I'd go out there and feed. And turn the heater up a little bit while I'm feeding. And I had a little Keurig coffee maker there in my tap room. And I would sit there and
there you go.
That is where I wrote my book. Yep.
Well, that now you're talking. Every time you say something, I like you even more. But when you hit the coffee thing, you just went through the roof with me. I think coffee's like ambrosia. It just makes you a lot smarter. See, I mean, I keep this thing going all the time.
I love it. Sure. I love it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's implementing. You know, if you're reading a book, if you're listening to a podcast, if you're going to a workshop, I mean, you can go there either for entertainment or you can go there for education. And I choose, you know, draw that line in the sand. I'm gonna use it for education. I'm going to pull something out of it and implement it.
I've got one more question, and then we can wrap up or we can go into something else. But we got a lot of competitors that are coming in for the World Show this year, and that'll happen into September, 1st October. And I read in your book, there's primary questions, and there's positive and negative primary questions. And, you know, you need to develop which ones you're asking yourself as you get in. So let's assume that some of the people that are going to come to our World Show, they need help with their mental game.
What would be three primary questions, positive primary questions, that you would tell some, it can be very generic, obviously, to tell someone to ask themselves as they're preparing or coming in for the world show?
Well, here's my favorite. How can I close the gap to get from where I am to where I want to be?
Okay.
I mean, that was huge for me. Acknowledging, what am I doing well? Because what gets rewarded gets repeated. A lot of times we just ignore what we're doing well. You know, what am I doing well? Ask yourself, what can I do better? How can I do it differently? You know, what's one thing I can stop doing that'll help me move closer to where I want to go with the world? What's one thing I can start doing? What's one thing I can stop doing? What's one thing I can start doing? What's one thing that I'm doing right now that I'm going to continue doing because it served me well?
Yeah.
I mean, those are some pretty basic questions. I mean, who can help me close the gap from where I am right now to where I want to be? Who can I ask? Who can I reach out to? You got time. You got time. What are my needs works? Where are my strengths at?
Those are good. Those are great questions for someone to ask as they're preparing through these next couple of months for that event. So I think that's awesome. Dr. Smith, you got any other questions?
No, I think this is fantastic. You've actually given me some defensive strategies to work with young Stephen here. So he's about to go to school.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't think that, you know, I've been listening to and taking my notes for Dr. Smith as we go through this. And I, you know, at Dr. Smith's age, I didn't know that you could go back to school then, but I guess he's going to get to. So that's pretty cool. I feel like that's awesome. Might get a fifth degree there, Dr. Smith.
See, you see, Donnie, what I have to put up with, and I put up with this every stinking day.
Well, here's the thing, Doc. You get to.
That's right. That is 100% right. You know, I know you were going up on Billy's list, but man, I tell you what, you're at the top of my list now, Donnie. Woo. You get to. That's going to be my comment every morning when I walk into this office. I'm putting my head in Billy's office and say, guess what, Billy? You get to.
I'm going to give you a call a little later, Donnie, and we're going to have to straighten this out.
Big perspective, you know, it totally.
Yeah, you got to change this perspective, Billy.
You got to stop looking for gray hairs there.
well, as we wrap up here, Donnie, I know I would like you to tell everybody where they can get your book. I know you're a top Amazon seller. I don't know if that's the best place to get it, but I'd like you to tell everybody that. And then obviously you take on clients, things like that. So if somebody wanted to get in contact with you, I'd like you to kind of give you the platform here to kind of tell your deal.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Hey, I thoroughly enjoyed myself. I mean, this has been a lot of fun. And my book is on Amazon, and it's Heart of a Champion. And just warms my heart, you know, the response that I've gotten from this book. You know, the people who have read it, it's full of mental performance strategies. I do one-on-one coaching. I do it over Zoom, we do video. I love being able to see my clients as I coach them. And I'm really active on Facebook and Instagram. My handle, Donnie Taylor, not too creative there, just my name. And my website is DonnieTaylor.com. And there's a contact form there. And my email is DonnieTaylor@gmail.com. Real easy. My phone number is in the back of the book. I want to connect with people, whether you want one-on-one coaching or you just want to give me your takeaways on the book. I love the connection.
Well, we really appreciate you taking the time to visit with us. I had a lot of fun on this one, too. Mental management and mental preparation is a huge area that I try to work on. So getting to hear some of your thoughts and inputs, I feel like it'll be a benefit for me, and I hope it does for some of the others that listen to this. And it's been awesome. I've thoroughly enjoyed this podcast.
Yeah, it's been an honor. Thank you, Donnie.
Ah, thank you. No, it was a privilege to be on this, and I hope to check in with you guys again. Have fun. Good luck at the World Show.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Donnie. It was great.
Well, that'll do it for this week's episode of the Mark for Greatness podcast. We sure appreciate Donnie and Taylor coming out and giving us a little mental preparation before the 2020 World Championship show that'll happen in Fort Worth, Texas, September 18th through October 4th. Be sure to get your entries in by August 21st to get the best rates. We sure appreciate it and can't wait to see everybody there. Take care, and we'll see you on the next show.